I didn't know the first thing about it. I didn't know what sort of compliance you needed. I didn't know anything. So I leaned on my NABPAC network.
Welcome back to the Facts About PACs podcast. I'm Adam Belmar, joined today by David Schild.
Adam, we are just incredibly lucky today to have another smart guest, another representative of the industry. I love their ads on TV, so I'm just assuming their PAC is going to be well run.
If you're on the Magenta plan, you know about T-Mo. And David, you're right. We are lucky to have an amazing PAC professional as our special guest today. Lisa Strakowski-Gilman is a talented practitioner, a leader here at NABPAC, and a great communicator when it comes to PAC and government affairs.
And a fellow graduate of the George Washington University. Good to see a few of us out here earning a living.
You know that's true. GSPM and GW University, known to so many, a great place to learn this business. So coming up, Lisa Strakowski-Gilman, Principal Manager, Government Affairs at T-Mobile, joins the number one PAC podcast in America. The Facts About PACs podcast is produced especially for members of the National Association of Business Political Action Committees. In every episode, we recap this week's NABPAC activities, share actionable intelligence and best practices, all while connecting the PAC community.
Thanks, Adam. I am really pumped to have Lisa with us here today. You know, she's got this really interesting career. She's been through mergers and acquisitions. She's put PACs together. You know, it's not like making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? It's a little bit more like putting Prince Harry and Meghan Markle together. So I'm very curious to see how we make it work.
Lisa Strakowski-Gilman, welcome to the Facts About PACs podcast.
Thanks. It's great to be here. Excited to join the podcast.
Now, listen, early in your career, I know for you, it was a moment there that's true for so many professionals in our space. Somebody asked you if you wanted to help out with a PAC. Did you know what you were getting into when you said yes to that?
Absolutely not. I had no idea what I was getting into. And honestly, I don't think anybody goes to university and says, I want to run a political action committee when I grow up. You know, I had my start in government affairs. I've been a government affairs professional my entire career, which incidentally, I didn't start out doing when I went to college anyways. So, you know, life happens in mysterious ways. But, you know, I joined Guardian Life Insurance back in 2013. And, you know, they were a small shop. And we had, you know, about three lobbyists total and nobody to run the pack. And they were, geez, is this something you'd like to try and like to do? And, you know, I didn't really know what I was getting into, but I had good organizational skills. I am meticulous about a lot of things. So I guess I checked the right boxes because I kind of jumped in head first. And here we are, what, 11 years later, and I'm still doing it.
Lisa, how common is this story, right? Somebody shows up in a government affairs shop and the PAC sort of is an orphan, right? It doesn't have a parent at the time. And people look around and they look at somebody competent. They look at somebody who has energy. And pretty soon, you're a member of the TSBO club, as I call it, the Traumatized Small Business Operator group, because that's what you're doing, right? You're running this small company. And maybe when we all got handed that PAC responsibility, we didn't quite realize it.
That's very true. And I like how you put that. We are kind of traumatized. We are single practitioners. You know, there's one, maybe two, if you're lucky, people that do the same thing in your company at a whole. So you're on an island. You have to drink from the fire hose quite a lot. There are a bunch of different skills that you need to learn if you don't have them. But I think it gives you a well-rounded background and a well-rounded career if you can succeed at something like a PAC. Back to your previous question, do you think this is common? I would say yes. I think when individuals hire a government affairs professional, it could be lobbying, it could be working behind the scenes, it could be just basic beginner administrative stuff. And it gives the office time to kind of figure out where your strengths lie. And I was hired as a lobbyist primarily, but we weren't doing a ton of lobbying at the time, or there wasn't a lot that needed to be done. And frankly, I had also never lobbied. So I gravitated toward the PAC. And I think that's the case in a lot of situations with a lot of individuals like me who didn't grow up and know exactly what they wanted to do and kind of joined a company, not because it was their dream job, but just because it was something that sounded interesting and a job to pay the bills. I kind of just fell into it. And 11 years later, here I am.
So Lisa, you know, your story, I think, is common, as we discussed. But for our listeners, right? And we are across the spectrum, right? We have senior professionals who've been doing this for 2 or 3 decades. And I think we have people who have been running PACs for 2 or 3 months. If I'm in the 2 or 3 month club, I'm looking at you and going, okay, how did you survive? How did you make it? You talk about being alone within your organization in terms of PAC management. Where did you find support? Where did you find community?
I talked to a lot of people. So I was very lucky when I started working on a PAC that I had a very good friend that was in the PAC industry. And so she ended up giving me a lot of pointers, giving me places I needed to go, people I needed to talk to. She talked about NABPAC and how vital NABPAC was for her personal and professional development. Unfortunately, at the first job I was at, we didn't have access to NABPAC. So I found other ways to learn. I mean, I read, I went on FEC websites. I kind of just immersed myself in anything and everything related to political action committees. And I mean, like a lot of professionals, I think when you're starting out, I had to employ the fake it till you make it kind of mentality, because I didn't know what I was doing, but I asked a lot of questions and I definitely leaned on the other PAC professionals that I had started to meet. And I had just had faith in myself that I could do it.
You know, Lisa, I love that because that's what successful people do. And it makes me think a little bit, because it is spring and we are seeing all the trappings of growth and rebirth and bloom and blossom. But PACs in some ways are like plants, right? You got to grow them. When you were discovering everything you needed to know about how to do the job, when did you realize you were good at doing this? And how did you get good at the ask?
I think this is a very hard profession to be in. You are always constantly asking for money. A lot of times you're getting shot down. So I think you have to, in the PAC world, you kind of have to have a thick skin. You don't necessarily take no for an answer. I will say, I have a member of my family that is an entrepreneur. And the most interesting thing about her is that she does not let you say no. She will nag you to death until you say yes. And while I don't nag my contributors and I don't nag my prospective members, reinforcement and talking often about the PAC and going back to the well many times, you know, I wasn't afraid to get no for an answer. And I don't take any of it personally when someone can't contribute to a PAC or when someone is angry about PAC giving as a whole. I mean, we're in a very interesting time in society where even though we are employee-funded political action committees, there is a misnomer that, you know, we're corporate-funded PACs and we're contributing to members of Congress, not based on our business issues, but based on social issues. And so I will also say that education is key in making sure that PAC continues to thrive and that PAC continues to grow. It's a constant education. You know, we only contribute on our business issues. We only contribute to members that, you know, are working on things that will make our company better. And, you know, putting that education out there weekly, monthly, when you're passing somebody in the hall as often as you can, I think is really important. You talk about plants, you know, these are very slow growing plants. And sometimes a branch will break off, or you'll have a section where you have a lot of attrition in your company. So part of that plant will die. And so you have to figure out new ways to kind of grow the plant so it is bigger and so that it continues to thrive.
Lisa, I'm so glad you talked about this issue of rejection and being comfortable with being a little uncomfortable in terms of your success rate and your close rate, right? I mean, we talk about how best in class is 20% return, right? We go out into a room of 100 people and 20 of them sign up for the PAC, and that's considered rock star level performance. But of course, in a lot of sales cultures and a lot of other places, that wouldn't be considered best in class. And I think sometimes I've had to manage up to leaders and say, hey, you know, by having 17% participation, we're actually doing really well here. And they go, you're losing 8 out of 10 potential contributors. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm looking across the industry. I'm benchmarking. You know, you ran a very, very large, you continue to run a very, very large PAC, right? Lots of contributors. Do you ever struggle with that? Teaching management what you've sort of talked about on this show, which is, hey, rejection is a part of what we do here. And we need to level set about what good numbers look like.
You know, I did have to level set coming out of it when I first joined, but I will say that our company and especially our leaders, they understand the importance of the PAC, and they also understand that this is a voluntary exercise and that we have our corporate culture is not used to political giving. You may say, well, you have such a big pack, you know, they must be. We have a lot of political giving at the top. Our senior leadership, our VPs, they understand, they know what's going on, but that's only 20% of our eligible population. The other 80% come from, you know, individuals like me in manager and senior manager roles, you know, individuals that this isn't the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth thing on their mind every day. And it's very hard to convince those individuals to join. But I will say that, you know, we have wonderful support from our senior leadership, and I think they are most happy with our senior leaders contributing. So if we have a good success rate in our upper echelons, they're okay. And that getting the other 80% is just icing on the cake for them.
I'm thinking about all of our listeners who are nodding their heads as I am hearing you talk about your own experiences and the way that you came up and what you've learned. But you have some really amazing experiences that make you unique. And David referenced one of them. And I'm wondering if you can share some of what you learned in the process of bringing culturally two programs together into one. Can you tell us about what that kind of a challenge was?
It was very difficult. I will say, thankfully, and here's a NABPAC plug right here, there were people at NABPAC and there were individuals that helped me along the way. Like I stated earlier, you know, we're all kind of on an island and most of us, you know, are solo practitioners. So, you know, nobody I knew had ever commingled two PACs together. I didn't know the first thing about it. I didn't know what sort of compliance you needed. I didn't know anything. So I leaned on my NABPAC network, and there are several other individuals who've done what I did, who have gone through a merger and linked two PACs together. So, I mean, my first and primary thing is to use your resources. And thankfully, I have wonderful resources. I mean, the other thing is we had one PAC that was getting basically absorbed into another. You have two big companies, T-Mobile and Sprint, that were becoming the new T-Mobile. So as you can imagine, you know, a lot of individuals on the Sprint side were like, well, what is happening to my job? I'm not sure if I'm going to be here in 6 months. So we did see quite a bit of attrition before we merged the two PACs together. Following that, though, when we did our first solicitation post-merger, which I will mention was in the middle of COVID, we actually closed our merger on April 1st, 2020. So,
oh my gosh, talk about the timing.
Add another layer of that to it. It was very interesting once the dust settled, finding out who was coming back on board as a member of the new TPAC. Part of the difficulty when you're merging two PACs, there's a lot of reports you have to file, but you're also, for a while, you're managing two PACs at one time. So before the merger ever takes place, you have to merge two PACs. You have two separate PACs that are coming together. So making sure that all of the requirements as far as political giving, like you're not giving over the allotted amount in either PAC, because once you're closed, so on April 1st, 2020, we became one company, but we still had two PACs. So T-Mobile's PAC couldn't go over the 5,000 general, the 5,000 primary threshold. And we had to make sure, we had to do a lot of data crunching to make sure, checking with our Sprint folks, checking with our Sprint disbursements. So I guess suffice it to say, there were a lot of little steps that went into it. And a lot of the time you kind of felt like you were just kind of keeping your head above water. But we have one successful PAC now. Everything has merged together and it all came together in a really nice bow at the end of the day. But I will say that having individuals who have gone through what you went through and ones that you can help, you can use as a resource along the way is really key in any sort of big PAC project you're coming across.
And Lisa, I mean, that experience, it's unique, but it's uniquely challenging. And the culture part you talked about, I think, is so important because you said, look, there's all these people who are getting bought, right, for lack of a better word. And there's a lot of anxiety around that. And we're already pushing ice cream uphill with a stick doing political fundraising. And now people are worried about their jobs. I mean, that's just an additional cultural challenge to say, hey, we're in the midst of layoffs. We're in the midst of, you know, right sizing, finger quotes. What do you think about giving money to a political fund? I mean, I can imagine some of the pushback and some of the reluctance that you got from potential contributors.
There was a good deal of pushback. And then add on top of that January 6th, it's been it's been a few really trying years to all PAC professionals, me included. I mean, we saw a lot of attrition on January 6th too. And I think not so dissimilar to other PACs, we're kind of coming back up to right-sizing ourselves. You know, we dropped a lot of members and trying to figure out what the right attitude is to come up and build more membership in the PAC's been quite a struggle over the past couple of years because of all of these different events internally with the company, but externally also that have come into play. And I think that's something that most PACs are dealing with right now.
This is exactly why both of us were excited to have you on today.
Another great conversation on the Facts About PACs podcast. Lisa Strakowski-Gilman, Principal Manager, Government Affairs at T-Mobile. Thank you for sharing your story and your insights with all of us.
Thanks. It's been great to be here. Thanks so much.
And thanks to everyone listening. Subscribe. Meet us right back here for another new episode of the Facts About PACs.